Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, the world is changing so rapidly, isn't it? You ask any information technology person how fast the world is changing, and they will tell you they can hardly keep up with the various programming languages. It seems to be changing all the time. That's just one area of life that is changing so fast, let alone all the others. And yet, if this call of Jesus Christ means anything to us, it means that you and I, if we buy into it, are called to be transforming agents of change within this rapidly changing world. Now, how can we live up to that challenge? How can we stay ahead of the curve, so to speak? In essence, I guess the question is, what kind of person of faith will actually have influence over the next decade? Mal Fletcher is an author, speaker, and director of Next Wave International. One of his specialties is looking at social trends and mapping out how Christians can respond. So he's the guy to run this question past. Mal, welcome again.
Thank you, Sheridan.
You're back in Oz for your annual visit.
Yeah, something like that. It's usually once a year, although sometimes two or three. It just depends on the year.
Okay, you've been speaking at conferences this time. They've gone well?
Yeah, it's gone very well, actually, thank you. Been speaking a lot about this idea of ahead of the curve, what the church can do to become, as you say, a truly influential voice over the next 5 or 10 years. If we don't plan it strategically, we won't achieve it.
Now, 2020 seems to be a bit of a magical number for you. You seem to have a lot of articles. You seem to be writing a lot on this notion of 2020. Why have you picked that date out of any other date?
Well, obviously, it's got a catchy tone to it. You know, 2020 comes off the tongue easily. It also tends to be a touchstone in many areas of the corporate world, the media world. Technology talks about 2020. It seems to be a point at which people are just focused on what kind of world they want to live in by that period in time. So I've simply picked that up and pointed it toward those of us who have faith.
So with 2020 in mind, looking at that next decade to come, you've come up with these five qualities, I guess, of the person of faith, and these kinds of qualities that they will embody to become people of influence. I think whether you're a person of faith or not, there is something in the human psyche that actually wants to leave this world a little bit different than the way we found it, isn't there? There's something that is in there that makes us, we want to actually leave this place different because of our existence.
Yes, that's very true. I was doing some work in the BBC just a few days ago on that very issue, because at a time of material want, recession is a worldwide phenomenon at the moment, there's a growing trend towards moral altruism. When material security goes down, altruism goes up. People seem to want to find an alternative way of defining who they are. You know, when they can't define who they are by what they earn or their job title or their mortgage is looking a little shaky, they start looking for bigger picture stories to tell about themselves. And being involved in a cause is the most obvious one. So, yes, I think it is in our wiring that we want to make a difference, but it becomes more evident, I think, at times of challenge and change.
Okay, well, let's talk about this Christian of tomorrow, and I'm sure that people, no matter what their faith, will be interested to know these are five qualities. The Christian of tomorrow, I'll give you the quality, and you can flesh it out for us. These are your 5 points. Number one, the Christian of tomorrow, the person who will actually have influence over the next decade, will be a person who models the spirit of Jubilee. Unpack that one for us.
Well, Jubilee, of course, is a word that comes from the Old Testament. But the idea of Jubilee, not necessarily the word, has been picked up by economists today, by politicians, by prominent rock stars, by all kinds of people who are seeking to bring a new era of philanthropy and equity in economic terms to the world. People like Bono and Sir Bob Geldof have been speaking a lot about, you know, releasing the poor from debt and giving them the second chance they need to create a new life for themselves. And all of that, if you trace it back, comes from this idea of Jubilee. In the scripture, Jubilee was a year when all debts were cancelled. If you were in prison because of debt, and the most common cause of imprisonment in those times was debt, you were set free. So it's a wonderful period, this Jubilee year. Mm. Happened every 7 years, and then there was a special Jubilee every 50th year with added features. And this idea of, you know, giving people a second chance to climb out from under the mountain of their debt and build something for themselves again is very attractive in today's very inequitable world. And so I think the Christian that has influence in the next 5 or 10 years will be a person who takes seriously that biblical mandate to practice Jubilee in our own individual lives.
Mm. How do you think we can practice that in our own individual lives? How can it be brought down into an individual, day-by-day, choices-by-choices perspective?
Well, I think one thing we can do, and it's fairly obvious, is simply to adopt a more simple lifestyle. I happen to think that one of the biggest barriers to the spread of Christian faith in nations like Australia is lifestyle. We get so enamored with having what the catalogue says we should have or what seems to be on offer in the special sale down the road that we lose sight sometimes of more important priorities. So just simplifying our lives, not living in poverty, but just making some choices that this is how much I'm going to spend on myself. Above that, I have disposable income to use in a discretionary way to benefit others. I think learning contentment is a very important thing in today's world. So many are struggling to find in material things, to fill that spiritual or soul gap within that we as Christians believe is only found in one person. Mm. I think also sharing in sacrifice is an important thing. Volunteering is an important thing. Being able to invest our time sacrificially for the benefit of others. I have a friend in the UK who advocates 15 minutes of inconvenience, he calls it, giving our day 15 minutes that inconveniences us, but in some way helps someone else. I think it's a great start.
That's a great idea. This is Open House Across the Nation. Mal Fletcher is with us. We're talking about the Christian of tomorrow. What kind of person will they be who will actually bring positive change in the world? Number one, that quality will be they model the spirit of Jubilee. Number two, Mal, you say, that person, that influential person over the next decade will be intuitively pragmatic.
Yes, this is a good one. It always intrigues people when we put those two words together. Mm. I don't happen to believe that what we in the Christian faith called revelation and education, whether it's formal education or education from experience, are mutually exclusive events. I think that revelation and education are meant to work together. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think in a truly enlightened mind, revelation is worked out through education, and in some cases, education is submitted to revelation. So we've got the two working together. And if you study, even in the Bible, you study passages about, for example, Joseph coming before the Pharaoh in, I think, Genesis 41. Mm-hmm. It's not the revelation he receives about the king's dream that brings him favor with the king. It's the idea that he adds to it. And this is where we, I think, in some sections of the church anyway, have been relatively weak in our interface with the mainstream of society. We've been good at what we call revelation, but not very good at adding to that ideas that bring a pragmatic result. And, of course, in realms like politics, that's the name of the game, mm-hmm. Changing something, getting a measurable, quantifiable end result. So I think we need to become more skilled at generating and working with ideas. And just that fact alone, when it's expressed by people of faith, is often a great surprise to others in the community.
I guess maybe using an illustration you've already started to unpack, even that notion of Jubilee, which I guess is a biblical notion, it's a notion based on divine revelation. How is it actually put into practice, say, at the local political level? Well, it then comes down to applying creativity to that revelation to give it some sort of legs.
That's right. And I think, that's why it's so important that we are willing to take a risk with our ideas. Sometimes within the community of faith, if you share an idea, people who agree with your faith will say, well, that's a great idea, whilst they actually think otherwise. But if you take your idea beyond the community of faith and you take the risk of putting it out there where the real people live, so to speak, there's no condescension, there's no being kind. They'll just say the idea's rubbish if that's what they think. Hmm. And that's a big thing for the church, to learn to have ideas that are exposed to the possibility of ridicule and failure, but which could actually produce the change that makes the difference in people's lives.
Absolutely. I guess we could add a sixth point to all of this, and that's boldness.
Yes, boldness. Well, if you're talking about engaging with the future, you can't afford to have an attitude that cringes back in fear. You've got to have a very proactive way of thinking.
Yeah, okay. So the Christian of tomorrow, the person who will have influence over the next decade, will be, number one, a person who models the spirit of Jubilee. Number two, will be intuitively pragmatic. Number three, you say they will be predictably surprising. Surprise me.
Well, this, again, is a big one because in many instances today, the biggest enemy to communication of Christian faith is predictability. Mm. It's not humanism or existentialism or any of the isms you can think of. It's just the fact that in much of the community, certainly in areas like business and the media, as soon as you announce yourself a Christian anything, they think they know what you're going to say on any issue and how you're going to say it.
Yeah.
And that very predictability means that people switch off before they've really heard the story that we've got to tell. So it's very important that we break through that wall of stereotypes in order to get through to people where they're really living. And I say to people that, you know, given that we serve the most surprising, dangerous, unpredictable human being that ever walked the planet, we should be unpredictable. The only thing the community should ever be able to predict about us is that we will surprise them every time.
Mm.
And that might just mean, we come back to ideas, that might just mean thinking out of the box a little bit, trying to communicate our faith in ways that people aren't quite expecting. And there's a lot about Christianity, if you take it back to its radical roots, that people just don't expect. Jubilee is a good example of that.
Mm.
You know, being willing to release people from debt, that's a fairly radical thing to be talking about.
Mm.
And yet it is part of Jesus' statement in Luke 4, where he says, I'm announcing my ministry. I've come to preach good news to the poor and announce the year of Jubilee. Just that alone is a surprising and, I think, attractive element for the community.
Very much so. Mal Fletcher is with us on Open House. We're talking about the Christian of tomorrow. What will they look like? The Christian who actually has influence and actually doesn't just simply go with the tide, go with the flow, or simply throw stones at the darkness, so to speak, but actually is in there as an agent of change, bringing positive outcomes into this world, motivated by Christian faith. What qualities do they have? Mal says, number one, model the spirit of Jubilee. Number two, they will be intuitively pragmatic. Number three, they will be predictably surprising. And number four, Mal, able to impact spheres of influence. Now, I guess the key word here is spheres, plural.
Yes, well, here's an important one, particularly for those who are leaders, whether it's in, you know, Christians in business or media, Christians in church leadership. Traditionally, we have looked at people like the Apostle Paul in the New Testament and thought of them as people who really impacted geographical centers, and they did. In fact, if Paul hadn't gone to places like Corinth and Philippi and Ephesus, he may never have heard of them. It certainly was a key part of his strategy. But there was another side that we often forget. If you study around the middle chapters of Acts 15 to 17, you find that Paul is impacting people who actually shape spheres of influence. The first person who comes to faith under Paul in Western culture, when he gets to the Greek culture, is a woman who's an international trader in fine materials. She's an international woman of commerce. And thereafter, if you read the passages, you find that there's a whole string of these people who are representing things like bureaucracy, politics, the arts. You know, in Acts 17, the members of the Areopagus were philosophers, academics, and artists,
mm-hmm.
and patrons of the arts. So all of these represent spheres of influence that are still impacting us today, 2,000 years after Paul's time. And I think there's some wisdom there for us today, some strategic wisdom. We need to be people who are very much trying to, in a positive and proactive and servanthood way, to impact areas like business, corporate life, the arts, law, politics, media. And can I say, Sheridan, a lot of our problem in the past is we've been like a person who goes to a party, hears a conversation, stands back with arms folded, with a heavy scowl on our face, and only jumps in where we have something negative to say.
Mm.
You can't be a voice for change unless you positively engage the cultural conversation around you.
Very much so. And I think it's decreasing a lot these days, which is good. But, you know, there used to be the whole secular sacred divide in the past where to really be a spiritual Christian, you would be a missionary, particularly to Africa. You know, you'd have to go overseas. I think, you know, we're breaking that down and saying, no, you can. That's a great calling, by the way, being a missionary to Africa. But you can actually follow the call of God directly back into that boardroom, directly back into that workshop, directly back into that schoolroom.
That's right. You know, if I read the book of Proverbs correctly, the verse we love to quote, of course, if we are Christian, without vision the people perish.
Hmm.
It's actually a statement that's been taken by the corporate world as well now, because it's true. There needs to be vision. But in the Hebrew language in which that was written, it actually says without redemptive revelations of God, people perish.
Hmm.
And so if you're a person of faith, your focus is not just setting goals for the year, having, you know, a man-made vision, as it were, but taking what you know of God and living it out in practical, pragmatic ways. And as you do that, according to that scripture, you are redeeming things around you that were lost to the benevolent rule of God. So in the business culture, if you're living out Revelation in a very creative way, you will redeem things. People will start doing business more ethically, with more respect for their clients, better customer relations. All of that will flow if you are simply living out the faith that you espouse.
Your fifth quality of the Christian of tomorrow, the person who will actually have influence, is, I quote, they are able to challenge the big ideas that underpin postmodern thought. Give us an example of what you're talking about, because it starts to sound a bit abstract, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does a bit. Well, I wrote a book a little while ago called Five Big Ideas, and it looks at this whole question. You know, we live in a thinking culture, Sharon, and there are people we meet every day, I guess, who don't seem to be thinking anything much at all. But in fact, everybody out there is thinking through their worldview, their construct of reality. It's the picture, the story they tell themselves, which defines who they are and then shapes their decision-making, colors all of their choices. One of the big ideas that's become a fundamental plank of worldview for many people is a philosophical strand called existentialism. Now, most Aussies perhaps don't know that term. I guess many of your listeners will. But the existentialist idea basically says the past is irrelevant, the future's uncertain, so just live for the present. Mm. The best you can do in life, in other words, is to have a few good experiences before you die, because there is no ultimate meaning in life. So that's, you know, the whole party lifestyle kind of thing, the have another good holiday, you know, just save up and buy yourself a room extension on your house. It all springs from this idea that the best you can do in life is have good experiences. And whilst that sounds attractive, it's actually quite different from the view of life that Christ came to give, which is that we are not just built for time, we actually have an eternal soul, and that what we do in this life does carry over into the next. As one songwriter said, when this life ends, a better one begins. That's the Christian view. And so, you know, we're not people who are living simply for the next good experience. We believe in enjoying life because God gave it to us, but we're trying to achieve something substantial with it. And of course, there are many people who are not of faith who recognize the same priority.
So give me an example then as to how that Christian of tomorrow could actually, in a loving way, challenge that idea of existentialism, which you've, in a street-level way, actually just explained there. How can it be gently, lovingly challenged?
Well, I think one very big way, perhaps not so obvious, is that we don't live for our pension. And I know, you know, when you're 25, the word pension doesn't mean much. When you get to 50, it means a whole different thing. But I think that in the culture we are living in, there's a great deal of emphasis on accruing savings and things for that day when you will be old. And that's a good thing. I think that good stewardship is very important. It's certainly very biblical, you know, that we take care of ourselves and we are answerable for our resources and use of them. But our priority is not to live as if we are going to last 70, 80, maybe 90 years, but to live as if we are going to last for a lot longer than that in an eternal sense. So we die physically, but if you're a Christian, you believe that life goes on beyond that. So it's a very simple thing, but even saying to yourself, well, look, all right, I'm going to put aside for my pension, but I'm not going to treat that as a security blanket. I'm going to keep taking risks even into old age, healthy risks, positive risks for the benefit of others. That's one way. I think another way is going back to Jubilee, just adjusting our spending habits. Perhaps, you know, leaving the credit card at home and taking a limited amount of cash when we go to the shopping mall so that we're not going to be overspending, limiting ourselves so that we may be of service to others. That's not an existential way of thinking.
And what I like about what you've just said there is that it's not just simply challenging it in word, but actually in deed. It's actually challenging it in lifestyle, kind of living lifestyles that are actually speaking for themselves.
Yes, and I think you mentioned right at the outset, Sharon, the world of constant change. In fact, I think the only permanent thing for many people today is change. And a culture that's in transition like that is looking for reference points. People out there today, perhaps some of our friends, are looking for those who can be the one stationary point in a storm of change. And in many ways, I think it's what Jesus meant when he said we can be a city on a hill that cannot be hidden.
Mm.
You know, we can be that one steadying influence, that one proactive voice that says, you know, I'm not afraid of the future. I'm thinking ahead of time. I have a God who knows the future as he knows the past. I think that's very attractive in the world in which we live.
Mal, always good to talk to you. Thanks for those thoughts there. I think there's enough to unpack there for at least some of us to get a first two or three of them and start to become people of influence. Thanks so much for your time again.
It's a pleasure, Sheridan.
Yeah, good on you. Mal Fletcher, author, speaker, broadcaster, director of Next Wave International. If you want to find out a little bit more about him and some of the articles he's written along those lines, nextwaveonline.com is his website, nextwaveonline.com.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.